Hi, Sarah. Hi, Aziz. It's a real competition between transportation and energy here. So I guess we'll wait a minute or two and see who comes in. Sarah, can you tell if there's other people that are in limbo and have not yet joined one or the other? Or
We're completely joined now.
okay. All right. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think we have a small enough group where we should probably quickly identify ourselves and our names and who we represent. So it looks like we have about 8 or 9 people. Again, I'm Robert Bell with the Connecticut Department of Transportation. Maybe I'll just call people that as they go across the top of my screen. Aziz.
Hi, everyone.
Aziz, who you represent again?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm the executive director of the Connecticut Roundtable on Climate and Jobs.
All right, thank you, Sarah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah Watson with the Deep Office of Climate Planning.
Maureen?
Maureen Goulet with the Capital Region Council of Governments.
Hi, Maureen. Charles.
Good afternoon, all. Charles Rothenberger, climate and energy attorney with Save the Sound.
Thank you. Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris Phelps. I'm the state director with Environment America, Environment Connecticut, and the Public Interest Network.
Hi, Chris. Doris.
Doris Johnson, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection and in the Environmental Justice Program.
Nice to see you, Doris. James. No micro camera. Okay. He's from the public from the Danbury area. Alexander.
Hi, everyone. Alex Rodriguez, Environmental Justice Specialist with Save the Sound.
Okay. Well, this is an open forum for transportation, climate mitigation. The discussion. So the floor is open. If people want to use the raise the hand feature, we'll see how many people if there's a real pile on for people to talk. And we can talk, people can ask questions about the presentation I gave if you would like, or I think anything on transportation and the climate mitigation is really on the table here. So anybody would like to start first? Could be questions, it could be discussion topics, could be just comments.
I'll start by just letting everyone know that the Connecticut Roundtable Climate and Jobs is currently working with a couple of different organizations and corporations to put together a pool of cars. Hopefully, most of them will be e-vehicles for people who are coming out of apprenticeship programs. We know from this group that over 20% of the people in the state don't have access to a vehicle. And we're doing very well with workforce development. There are jobs available. There are apprenticeship programs and graduates from the apprenticeship programs. We're currently, as I said, working on an initiative to put together a pool of cars, maybe model it after zip cars. We're not exactly sure what the model is, but that's our intent so that people have access to cars, so that they don't have to get up at 4 in the morning to get to a job at 8 o'clock in the morning. And so that's one of the key transportation issues that the roundtable is currently working on.
Thank you for that. Let me just, anybody who would like to ask questions or add on in any way to that, topic? I don't see any hands, or I guess we have a small enough group where if you have something you want to add, please just go ahead. Okay, Maureen.
I missed the beginning of your presentation, and it was good to hear about the infrastructure plans for charging. And I think the plan that Aziz Dekan just shared also is really excellent. But I think if we're going to be really serious about climate mitigation, we need to get more people out of cars entirely. And, e-bikes are a good alternative, and hopefully we'll keep the buses free as well. But in general, so much of our transportation, and I think maybe that's not the right word, it should be mobility, not transportation, is because it's centered around vehicles more than anything else.
Yes, indeed. Would anybody like to?
Hey, Maureen, I'll respond to part of that too. Is we're always looking for transportation alternatives, right? And if we can find, there'll be jobs in specific places, and there'll be multiple people going to those jobs. So if we can find some kind of carpooling, electric buses, all of that, that's our first intent. But in absence of that, we're just trying to get people to jobs, and hopefully the vehicle pool that we put together will be e-vehicles. We're looking at government agencies where their cars are coming off, and we're actually looking at Eversource also. They've expressed an interest in pulling when their cars come off lease, to put those cars into a pool. And many of those are either hybrid or just beginning to be electric. So we agree with you completely. I didn't want you to think that wasn't on the table.
Progress, not perfection, right?
maybe that's the answer, right? It's like a 20-year-old problem, right? So we're just trying to find different solutions. And if this works, the more e-vehicles that come off of lease, the bigger that pool will become as a more energy stable source.
And one thing, of course, we deal with is just the landscape that we inherit and the landscape that we try to create going forward. And the landscape that we've all inherited is so car-centric in terms of land use planning in many ways, so that that's a significant part of getting people out of cars in our analysis is so directly tied to land use planning. And there's a lot of entities who have responsibility for that. And we already have our built landscape as we have it. So turning the ship, so to speak, is a significant effort, over time in the future. And we do have a significant percentage of people in the state who do not own vehicles or have low vehicle ownership. But for a couple pockets here and there, that's largely due to economics and not just pure choice. And as wages will rise or economic income levels rise, acquiring a car, is often one of those things that people would like to do because it just increases their freedom of mobility and their earning potential, greater access to jobs as regardless of bike and public transit networks, a car will typically add additional mobility value, for those who can earn the income to acquire one if they so choose. So that's part of the balance as well. Would anybody like to add on to this piece of the conversation or have another topic they would like to raise?
See, Alex hesitated to raise.
Robert, I have a question for you. As you're familiar with, as you're probably familiar with the long-term electrification targets regarding transportation and this new, longer term target of carbon carbon-free electricity by 2040. Has there been conversations between DOT and DEEP regarding prioritization of EV charging stations in EJ communities, because that conversation has begun with respect to the Shared Clean Energy Facilities Program. And so I'm basically asking if a connection is being made here regarding carbon-free electricity in EJ communities and cutting down transportation pollution with EV chargers in EJ communities.
That's it seems like there's a lot in that question on the energy side in terms of carbon-free generation. I will have to defer to others who have more expertise in that in terms of the carbon-free generation sources and the future planning for that, because I think, as you're pointing out, that electric vehicles, if they're charging off sources that are high carbon emitting of electricity, it's much less valuable in terms of greenhouse gas emissions and climate than it is if it's being produced from clean sources and zero or low carbon emitting
exactly. sources.
But I don't have, I'll be honest with you, I don't have expertise on the energy generation side. In terms of the location of EV charging and prioritization for lower income or areas or other areas of the state, we've had discussions without any significant clarity on how to approach it in terms of EV charging stations, especially for passenger, the passenger cars out there that people own, putting aside workforce or fleet. But for the general population, passenger cars, at some point in the future, there's going to be a timing element in terms of, when that would have the best bang for the buck in terms of certain areas of the state. Right now, if it's an area of the state that has low vehicle ownership data, the vehicles that are owned tend not to be the more expensive vehicles. And currently, unfortunately, electric vehicles are on the more expensive side. So, finding the where the right locations would be, so to speak, in terms of emission reduction and also serving people who would most likely, who would use it. So the facility gets used a lot. That's a tough thing to figure out. And it's I think it's going to be a few years until things set up and prices come down on the electric vehicles so that it can sort of find that sweet spot. One program we have that we're initiating is that federal National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program. And there is a equity component to that. The first phase by federal rules has to be along the interstates, along our alternative fuel corridors. And we've identified where the gaps are that we can meet the federal rules on that. We have included equity considerations and population density to try to maximize, creating our zones in areas that can benefit the greatest number of people in terms of emission reduction. But where the cars charge up isn't necessarily always also where they would drive, so to speak. And I think the ultimate goal is to reduce the number of internal combustion engines overall, because air pollution doesn't really know boundaries as much as other types of pollutants might. Anyhow, I probably went on too broadly on that one. So who wants to join in?
Yeah, just one last point, Robert, to the degree that you or a member of the DOT could closely monitor the results of the Shared Clean Energy Facility proceedings at DEEP, as well as the comprehensive energy strategy results, I would implore your staff to do so to make sure that there is interagency coordination on decarbonizing our grid while also making sure that we are electrifying the transportation sector in EGA communities especially. So I just want to pass that recommendation on to you.
Thank you. That's an excellent recommendation. We do collaborate on many fronts between the two agencies, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection and the Department of Transportation. We do actually have routine meetings in terms of planning for both light duty as well as medium and heavy duty vehicle conversions to electric vehicles and other alternative fuels. We collaborate on PURA proceedings regarding those issues. And we have consulted with them and will always and continue to do so on the NEVI program as it continues to roll out. Thank you.
Hey, Robert. So I apologize. I'm afraid I missed your presentation, but I look forward to seeing the recording. Is there a timeline for completion of the phase one of the NEVI build out along the alternative fuel corridors and then moving into that next phase?
Yeah. So for everybody else, so phase one of that NEVI program is a requirement to build out the infrastructure along the alternative fuel corridors, and which is essentially interstates in Connecticut. We identified 10 zones that meet the gap areas. The gap areas are identified by being 50 miles apart, you know, making sure that there's electric charging stations of at least 4 ports, DC fast charging, publicly accessible within that 50-mile area. So we have about 10 locations we have to build out in order to complete phase one. We will have this solicitation out in 2023. We expect the first half of 2023. Now, the biggest difficulty in identifying any time frame is that unless the rules change, which potentially they could, currently we're not allowed to get to phase two, which means other parts of the state and potentially other types of vehicles until phase one is completely built out and up and running, which would mean, again, under the current rules, unless they change, whichever station of those 10 in those 10 gap areas is going to be the slowest to get up and running, that will define the time frame. We're not a fan of that. We would like to see that change, but currently that's going to define the time frame, and we don't have a sense of what that will be in terms of design, construction, procurement, any local permitting that the station owner operator might have to go through to finally get it up and running. So a long way to say I don't have a time frame. We're hoping, although you know, hope is not a real time frame, that it would be in about the 2-year period. But that is really, I hate to say it, but speculation at this point.
No, and thank you. That's helpful. The that detail about having the stations up and running, I think, may have escaped me. So that's a helpful, although unfortunate, clarification.
Yeah, it says construct. They said constructed, which essentially probably means up and running. And we have identified that we would prefer that the slowest doesn't hold down phase two, but we'll see if that changes or not.
Great, thank you.
Anybody else would like to add to this issue?